Thanks. So what do you think motivated you to volunteer in the first place, and why specifically at the soup kitchen?
That's a good question. So my son actually passed away in December of last year, but he struggled with mental health. And he lived in and out of different nursing homes. And I felt like, okay, you know, these people, my son could be one of those people living on the streets. And it was a chance for me to give back, be involved, and contribute in a way that I felt was effective and compelling. It also allowed me to engage my son and have him part of it. He was actually our head of security here. He was a big, strapping guy, 6'4", 400 pounds, big beard. He knew many of the guests because he saw them either in the psych wards or the nursing homes, and they knew him, and they all liked him. And he was very helpful because when some guests got a little, non-compliant, it was always good to have an Aaron behind me to be that force that when I spoke, they saw him, they listened.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a bully. In fact, there was one guest that was threatening another guest with a hammer, and Aaron used his words to talk her out of doing that, and totally pacified the situation in a way that was quite impressive. Another time, a guy was threatening to punch somebody, and Aaron looked at the guy straight in the eyes and said, "You don't want to do that. Bad things are going to happen." And the guy just stopped and walked away.
Wow!
So that was my motivation. And we actually had his funeral here in the church and the reception down here.
Yeah. I feel like that's really fitting. A great way to honor him. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
He was very proud of it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you keep his memory alive by doing this. He's still here with us right now.
I'll share with you a picture of him.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
He was a giant of a man.
What was his name again?
Aaron. A-A-R-O-N.
That's a great name.
So... I might have a picture of him at the soup kitchen with me, but...
Oh,
okay, great. Sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh, that's so sweet. Oh, you guys look so happy.
Yeah, that's so awesome. He was my guy.
That's so sweet. Yeah, I'm sure he meant a lot to other people here to see him, too.
He did. Matter of fact, a guest I hadn't seen in months showed up here, and he knew Aaron quite well. And, he went out of his way to, express his condolences.
Yeah.
But we donated a lot of Aaron's clothing here, and a lot of the people got his jackets or his sweatshirts. And this man's still wearing his coat months
later.
That's
sweet.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, this man got his shirt.
So you see parts of your son in the community through the clothes he donated?
For sure.
Yeah. That is incredible.
That's his hat.
I love that.
James got a sweatshirt. He had another hat there by Jack. Jack knew Aaron quite well. Sean and Aaron had a bond. Sean's a big guy. Matter of fact, Aaron nicknamed Sean Captain Morgan because when Sean would sit there and eat his soup, he wouldn't sit, he'd stand. He'd put one foot on the chair like the Captain Morgan commercial.
Yeah.
And so he and Aaron had a simple bond. But
that is so cool.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's incredible. Do you still see a lot of those people on a regular basis?
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Especially the one. But, God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And then a bit about the soup kitchen itself. I know you guys mentioned some soup and salad. Are there any other kinds of food? And then how is it, transported or prepared?
Yeah, so the food's primarily consumed down here. We make two 50-gallon pots of soup.
Yeah.
And the soup can vary from whether Tuesday or Friday based on what protein we have to use and what vegetables we have to go with that. And we try to make it somewhat recognizable as a soup, not so much a goulash. There's salads that Cecilia and Mel will make that will then be delivered to the table. All the guests are treated as if they're at a restaurant. They come and sit down, and we serve them their soup at the table. We serve them their salads. If we have bread, we'll bring bread to the table. bring coffee or milk or water or juice to the table. Then we also have containers that we'll package up that if people want to take the soup home, they can take the soup home for the week. And then before they leave, they can go to this window here, and there's bags of food that we will give them that might have a sandwich in it. If we have apples, we'll put apples in there, or oranges, or crackers, or chips, or cheese, or other stuff that we can kit together. And they'll take that home with them. We open the doors at 5:30 p.m., and the guests are allowed to be down there until 6:30 p.m. Now, sometimes we'll let that linger a little bit, but we try to keep it tight because the volunteers want to get home too.
Yeah.
We don't want to take advantage of the volunteers. And we usually start, I usually get here about 2:30. Joanne and Cecilia will get here a little earlier. Some people start their routines. And we're usually walking out the door by 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So it's a long day.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday and Friday. I jokingly tell people I'm the chief cook and bottle washer because I'm one of the chief cooks for making the soup, and I do the dishes. And and then I also do security or whatever might be needed. So
that's great. You're kind of a jack of all trades.
I have a question. I know typical soup kitchen setups are like buffet style, but to treat it like a restaurant rather than that, is there a reason that you guys do that, or is there?
It was
like
more to give these people dignity. Yeah. They're human beings.
Yeah.
You know, there's somebody's mom, father, aunt, uncle, brother, son, daughter, sister. You know, they're human beings. And that's why. And I think it plays out in how we also, approach it.
Yeah.
So if you approached it like a buffet style, I think we wouldn't have that personal connection. And that was the main motivation. That was Jim's idea from day one. Jim Ader.
That's awesome. Yeah, because that really sets it apart from other soup kitchens I've heard of. You know?
That's what we hear.
That's great.
We get a lot of compliments.
Yeah.
We serve about, the number's been higher as of late. So the other night we had 143 people.
Okay.
But as I said earlier when I gave you the tour, when this first opened, he was serving upwards of 500, 600 people a night when they were doing it. So, and they had some wild times back then where people were crazy. It keeps going.
Do you happen to know, is there like an especially bad need back then for it? Was this like the only soup kitchen around, basically?
Well, back in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, most of the country shut down, all states shut down their psychiatric hospitals. So for whatever reason, Uptown became the magnet for all those people within Illinois, for probably 75% of that community. So it was just overwhelmed with, people who lived on the edge of society and needed help. And the church saw a need. And Jim used to joke all the time that he was the temporary director. He was only supposed to be the director for 2 weeks. They'd go find somebody. And he was a Chicago public school teacher. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. Sure enough, he stayed on 40 plus years later.
So through my research, it talked about the institutionalized closing in the late 70s and how fights used to break out here almost every day.
Yep.
And it said that, Jim, there's a point where they were deciding on whether or not they should close down the soup kitchen, actually. And Jim decided that before he made his decision, he wanted to go and pray. And then when he came back, he had an idea of wanting to pray between all the meals. And that was what kind of calm the people down at the end, and they end up not shutting it down and using that prayer to sort of make the people not fight each other, basically.
Interesting. I didn't know that part. So
okay.
That's good history. But we do say a prayer before every soup. And on Tuesday nights, there's Vespers upstairs, so many of us are up afterwards and attend Vespers. If you go to church and listen to the gospel, this is what Christ calls us to do, is to serve our fellow human beings. And, if I miss church on a day, I don't feel so bad if I'm working at the soup kitchen because it's kind of like going to church.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible. So this is Kylie. This is Dennis. Okay. Yeah, she also goes to Loyola.
Welcome.
So I think you answered a lot of these. Do you guys have many donors and supporters of the soup kitchen?
We do. It comes in all shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. The church, once or twice a month, we'll take a collection up at church at Mass for additional funds. The parish does a lot of it. a lot of the food comes from the Chicago Food Depository. We're not charged for it at the moment. That's probably going to change. But then there's also private donors that come forward, you know, friends or people we never met. Just, you know, there's a need, and you know, they donate. Matter of fact, there's a meeting this Friday. I can't make it, but someone's stepped forward, and they're willing to give us some equipment to help improve the soup kitchen. My vote is for, we have an oven back there that works, you know, sometimes doesn't work so well. So my vote is let's get two regular ovens with some stovetops that we can cook different types of meals on as well. And, you know, take advantage of that. We can have people just drop checks off the church and say it's for the soup kitchen.
Okay, that's awesome, because I was about to ask, like, if there was any preferred way to donate. Would it be, like, your time, your money, anything? Is there a preference?
You know, time's always valued, appreciated. Money helps with a lot of things. So, you know, whatever works for the person.
Okay, thank you. It's good to know. And then, this might be kind of a stupid question, but does the kitchen serve people of all faiths?
We don't ask if they're Catholic or Christian. We don't require people to show any identification. I'm sure we get people that are Jewish, you know, Christian, Catholic, Buddhist, Baptist. I met a guy the other day from Ghana, Africa, you know, right off the boat. Don't know what faith he is, didn't ask him. But we don't. There's no litmus test. Although we do, you know, we're Catholic, so during Lent we don't serve meat on Fridays. The soup is a high protein soup, but not meat.
And then, do you have, I mean, you already shared a lot, but do you have anything else, like, interesting to share about the history of the evolution of the soup kitchen? Anything to add?
Jim always talked about some of the different miracles. So back to the time when there was fights going on. Jim was about to get beat up and by some of the guests. And out of nowhere, these two big black gentlemen showed up. He'd never seen them before. Doesn't know who they are, didn't know who they are. But they came in and stood right behind him. And the people stopped and sat down, and everything dissipated, and then they were gone.
Wow.
So,
that's incredible.
Don't know if they were angels, but...
It kind of sounds like it.
The other time, this is more on the funny side, something happened where the soup got burned, and you can't, you know, can't serve soup. And they used to burn the pot quite a bit because they used to clean those pots. Anyways, this soup was just not salvageable, and we didn't know what was going to happen. And next thing we know, there's a knock at the door, and the person has a food truck, and they're coming from some event. And they've got hundreds of hot dogs pre-cooked, wrapped in foil bags that they were looking to donate. That became the dinner for the night.
That's incredible. What year was that, would you say?
That was back in the early 2000s. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Jim talked about that all the time. So.
Yeah, it really does seem like a, you know, act of God.
Do you wonder, right? Yeah. Eyes wide open. But, you know, that's the, you know, God touches you in different ways.
Yeah.
Just have your eyes open for it.
Yeah, definitely. And what impact do you think it would have on the community if the soup kitchen no longer operated? Like, what do you think people would do? Where would they turn?
They would turn to the corners. They'd be begging at the restaurants, begging at the street corners. God knows what.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I did learn through all of my research, and, like, we even got to look through the rectory and some documents, and it really seemed like, you know, there have been ups and downs and, like, means and money and, you know, resources and everything, but the church has never let that affect, like, the congregants. They're always there. They never let, like, anybody get down on their luck, and, like, the church isn't there for them, so.
Yeah, no, this church is, again, the Franciscans deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And they've done a nice job keeping this going, keeping this thing. It's, you know, probably doesn't get enough credit. They don't get enough credit for what they do. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So, we need volunteers in the summer, so if there's people who want to volunteer.
That's actually good to know. Yeah.
Show up.
Mm-hmm. And then every Tuesday and Friday?
Every Tuesday and Friday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll definitely.
Show up around 2:30. Be ready to go home around 7.
I might actually do that this summer, because I'll be in the suburbs. So.
You got my number.
Awesome, yeah.
Bring some friends.
Family. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you guys want to too. Yeah. Yeah, really? That's awesome.
I did it as well. Never lived.
Yeah.
They had like fish fry soup kitchens.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, you'll see people of all levels of health conditions. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, there was actually a Loyola student that was volunteering that night. This gentleman came in and he had frostbite on all his fingers. Hardly could walk, but couldn't hold his pants up. He had to go to the bathroom. And this young man helped him. Didn't bat an eye. The grace of God. So.
That's beautiful. I saw on the food pantry website, it says that you guys serve locals as well as out-of-area clients on an emergency basis. And have you ever experienced that emergency scenario before?
No, the soup kitchen is a separate operation from the pantry, which is in that room there.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a nice setup. The Knights of Malta actually helped set that up.
Oh.
But we know we get people from out of the immediate radius.
Yeah.
Right? I know we get people from the west side of Chicago, south side of Chicago, as far north as Evanston that come down here for our soup. But we don't put a restriction on where you're from. The soup kitchen does because they just have to. They try to serve the area. They're trying not to get double dipped by people from outside the area.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then, does the soup kitchen ever work alongside St. Gregory's or St. Ida's ever?
We've always done it here.
Okay.
There was talk about moving it at one point, but that just didn't make sense.
Okay.
So.
I know we've already kind of gone into this, but are there any other people that you've encountered while volunteering here that have really like touched you or made an impression on you?
Just the individuals I've gotten to know by their name. Some of the people I've shown you pictures of who I get close to. I see people on the street. I know where they live. They live either in a bus stop or under the bridges.
Yeah.
And, that's about it. So.
And what do you feel that the best thing has been about this volunteer experience for you?
It's, again, as I said earlier, it's allowed me to walk in Jesus' steps. We all go to church, you kind of get in your routines, you probably get distracted. Your phone's buzzing because there's a text message or something, right? You're not really taking in or really thinking deeply about what's being said in the Gospels and the readings. But this is living the life of Jesus as much as possible and doing what he would want of us. So I feel I'm closer to God that way.
Yeah, I would agree. And then, do you have any questions for us or anything else you'd like to add?
Do you guys volunteer now?
No, not recently, in the past few years.
So, if you don't value your time, nobody else will. And if you don't schedule your time, you won't use your time as best you could. So find something now. Set a goal and say, I'm going to. It doesn't always have to be money. It can be time that you're giving to the service of the church. And pick something, whether it's this or the food pantry or some other cause. And build it into your schedule, just like you would a meeting, just like you would going out with friends for drinks or some other fun activity. And you won't regret it.
Well, I think I graduate next week, but after that I'll be in the suburbs. But I would like to come in maybe like once a week or something. I have your number, so
I
get in contact with you. Yeah.
You're welcome to.
Yeah, thank you. Do you guys have anything else? Any other questions?
Based on your experiences, what wisdom would you share with future generations about service, community, and kindness?
We're all part of the same community. But for the grace of God, any one of us could be in this situation. The people I see here most likely have some mental illness, something that didn't enable them to live out a full life. And they tried to find coping skills that, don't work, whether it be drugs, alcohol, or just, separating from society. So if we don't do this, who will? If not us, who? Right? So if you want a strong community, then you need to focus on the family. The family is part of the community. Mother Teresa said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. So love your community like your family. you know, we'll have a better community. Make sense?
Yes.
What else do you have?
I had something. So from this whole experience talking with us and anyone who might listen to this, what is like one thing or a couple things you're hoping that people take away from us speaking with you today? What do you want people to leave with after we speak?
Yeah, we're not really solving the we're not solving the underlying problem. We're just kind of, this is a band-aid. The underlying problem is a major mental health issue in this country that's not being addressed properly. And people are turning to drugs, alcohol, or something else to try and solve it. So we really need to put more focus on that. I also would say that, you know, for years people were okay driving by people living on bus stops or living in tents or, you know, God knows where else. Somehow we found a lot of money for all these migrants coming to the country. All right, well, got a lot of Americans here that need help too. So how do we step back and recognize that there's people that need help and put our priorities behind our family? It was politically, there was no political price to pay for people to ignore the people in the shadows. So I think we need to shed some light on the shadows and try and help everyone, not just the newcomers to the country.
So. Has it been working at the volunteering at the soup kitchen that's like changed your view on things like mental health and homelessness and unhousedness in the country?
I think my experience with my son, what he had to deal with, the challenges there, have made me much more aware that it impacts more people than we know. People don't talk about mental health. People ignore talking about it because there's stigma around it. That's part of the problem. If they erase that stigma, they really get people the help they need. There are services out there, but if you don't have somebody advocating for you, it's very hard to get the services. That's a challenge. So for me, it's just more awareness and more freedom to talk and share with people what I do and expose people to what the opportunity is. Because many people, they don't want that inconvenient truth. They, you know, like to go about their day thinking everything's fine, someone else is taking care of that. Well, that someone else taking care of it is us, one way or the other. And so I think more awareness, more accountability, recognition that more needs to be done and can be done.
Anything else to add?
I wasn't sure what questions were asked.
Yeah.
Talk about the merger at all?
Yeah.
With the church?
Yeah.
Like you talk about like how it affected.
It didn't. It didn't affect this operation at all. If anything, it brought more people to help volunteer from the different churches. It wasn't just this parish doing it. I think the way the Franciscans have handled the merger of Mary, Mother of God Parish has been phenomenal. And I love the name. And I love how they've kept all three churches viable. They're still part of the parish. And the people who grew up in those parishes don't feel like they were left astray or abandoned. So, it's been good.
I think then that's it from us. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Yeah.
Back a volunteer.
Yeah.
Of course.